Hello, and welcome to today's episode of Employment Law Matters. This week's episode is on non-disclosure agreements. I'm Daniel Barnett, barrister from Outer Temple Chambers. In this episode, you'll hear some of the pros and cons of non-disclosure agreements, and you'll learn when a non-disclosure agreement is enforceable and when it's not. First of all, a big thank you to Judge Becky, who said this on iTunes.
Daniel's podcasts are relevant to the everyday work of HR, are concise and easy to understand, and, whilst referring to the law, go that one step further to explain practical application.
Thank you, Judge Becky. If you send your name and address to podcast@danielbarnett.co.uk, we'll put a copy of one of my books in the post to you as a thank you for your time. And now, non-disclosure agreements.
Welcome to Employment Law Matters with Barrister Daniel Barnett.
There are two types of confidentiality agreement. The first is relatively uncontroversial. Don't tell anybody the Coca-Cola secret. Don't tell anyone about our trade information or the details of our clients or our customers. Nobody blinks twice at those. But then there's the other sort, the sort that attract the criticism in the press. Don't tell anybody that we've paid you a settlement sum because you made allegations of sexual harassment. Don't tell anybody that there is a culture of workplace discrimination. Those sorts of non-disclosure agreements that stop people talking about that sort of thing in exchange for a payment are highly controversial. Many people think that non-disclosure agreements are good. Many people think they're bad, and it can vary depending on the context. The 120 hostesses who, after signing confidentiality agreements immediately before going to the Dorchester Hotel for the President's Club dinner and being groped by an entirely male guest list, probably thought those confidentiality agreements were a bad thing. The employee who doesn't have to go through the stress, hassle and aggravation of a one-year drawn-out sex harassment claim in the tribunal, which she may or may not win, and gets a sum of money in exchange for signing a settlement agreement, may think it's a good thing. We all know claimants aren't bound to sign non-disclosure agreements. The argument is non-disclosure agreements are good. They're good because people can get money, they can settle their litigation, they can move on with their life. It's voluntary, it's their choice. On the other hand, there's the school of thought that says employers sometimes use confidentiality clauses to browbeat employees. Employers know the employees can't afford to litigate. They know they can't afford to wait a year before they get any money. There is a substantial disparity in power, and confidentiality clauses are unfairly used by employers. Now, the practical problem is it's very difficult to tell the difference between the good sort of confidentiality clause, where someone's freely entered into it to settle a claim, and the bad sort, where someone's been browbeaten by their employer because they're too scared to go to a tribunal. Because here's the rub, they look the same. It's impossible to know which is which. Which is why it's so difficult to actually outlaw the bad sort. Because if you outlaw the bad sort, you're probably outlawing the good sort as well. And there have been several inquiries to look into the problem. There was a report by the Equalities and Human Rights Commission in 2018 which said, I'm paraphrasing, we recognise there's a real problem telling the good sort from the bad sort, and we're going to spend 90 pages telling you we don't actually know how to solve the problem. In March 2018, it was republished in December 2018 because not enough people read it first time round. The Solicitors Regulation Authority issued a warning notice reminding solicitors they can get into enormous professional trouble if they draft a confidentiality clause containing a phrase saying you can't make a protected disclosure. And that would cover some allegations of sex harassment. So be cautious as a solicitor when drafting confidentiality clauses. Now, when are non-disclosure agreements enforceable? When are non-disclosure agreements enforceable? Well, always. As long as there's consideration for them, they're enforceable all the time, with just two exceptions. Exception number one is in section 43J of the Employment Rights Act. That says any term of a contract, that includes a settlement agreement, that purports to stop someone making a protected disclosure is void. That means that if someone is asked to sign a gagging clause in an employment contract, saying they'll never disclose to their employer, to the police, to whomever it might be, any serious wrongdoing of a sexual nature, it's probably void under section 43J. The second exception is a new and developing one that's coming up through case law. Judges have said in a number of cases, as a point of principle, where the public interest in allowing the woman, and I'm using the female pronoun because it tends to be women who sign these agreements, where the public interest in allowing the woman to speak to the public outweighs the public interest in getting her to stick to the terms of the agreement she signed, a judge will declare a confidentiality clause void. I'll say that again. Where the public interest in allowing the woman to speak to the public about what's happened outweighs the public interest in getting her to stick to the terms of the agreement she signed, a judge will strike down the confidentiality clause. Now, what can you do as an employer to maximise your chance of keeping this type of clause enforceable? I think there are four things. None of these are in case law anywhere. They're my four suggestions. Suggestion number one is have the confidentiality clause as a standalone agreement. So if there's a standalone agreement saying you won't discuss or repeat the allegations of harassment you've previously raised in exchange for a payment, rather than that clause being buried deep down in clause 16 of a long settlement agreement, a judge is much more likely to say you knew, you realised, you appreciated what you were signing, and there's a greater public interest in getting you to stick to it. So have it as a standalone agreement. Number two, include some exceptions. So say in the agreement, you're allowed to make protected disclosures, you're allowed to go to the police. You don't need to say that, but if you do, it's going to make a judge more likely to say, this stops you going off to the Sunday Mirror. Number three, again, there's no case law on this. These are my suggestions. Limit the duration. How long do confidentiality agreements normally last? Well, most of them are expressed to last for life. They never have a time limit on them. Limiting the duration isn't always going to work, but in the right case, if you limit the confidentiality agreement to, say, 3 years or 5 years post-employment, a judge is much more likely to say it's a reasonable fetter, a reasonable gagging clause, and I, the judge, am going to uphold it. And 3 years or 5 years down the line, in most cases, the woman will have moved on with her life. She'll have a new job. She'll not be thinking about what happened to her 3 or 5 years ago. And it's much less likely she'll want to go to the papers or, indeed, if she does, unless the employer is some massive name, it's much less likely the papers are going to be interested in printing a 3 or 5 year old allegation. And number four, make sure they take independent legal advice. Obviously, if they're signing a settlement agreement, they'll do so. But if it's just a sign this, please, and we'll give you some money type agreement, or a COT 3 reach through ACAS where legal advice isn't necessary, the fact they've got independent legal advice is more likely to get a judge to say the public interest in having her stick to the terms of the contract that she got legal advice over outweighs the public interest in her being allowed to speak in public. If you do these four things, it's very unlikely, save in the most dreadful cases of impropriety, that a judge is going to say the public interest in letting her speak outweighs the public interest in sticking to the contract. Thank you very much for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please do leave a review on the iTunes store or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And you can subscribe to this podcast at www.danielbarnett.co.uk/podcast. And follow me on Twitter @Daniel_Barnett and send me a tweet. What's your favourite employment law?
Any information on this podcast is for general guidance only. Always seek legal advice. Please see full terms at www.danielbarnett.co.uk/podcast-terms.